All right. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 10 of the Yankee Fanatic Rodcast. We are back with our winter edition of our Rodcast that we do once every quarter. We have two of our regulars here joining me as usual. Of course, is Rod Brannon. How you doing, Rod?
Fantastic, Dan. How you doing?
Beautiful day, isn't it?
Oh, it's almost 60 degrees. A week ago, it was, minus 14?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice change, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. I feel like I should put some sunscreen out when I walk out the door this morning.
Might need it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're missing one of our regulars today, Tony Rhodes. I guess he has to work or something. He couldn't get off to record the Rodcast here early. But we do have a special guest in the house. We're going to change the format a little bit. Our guest does need to get somewhere else here in a little bit, so we're going to start out with him. And I'll let Rod do the honors of introducing our guest today.
Well, this is kind of a special deal because when I was growing up, I was a manager for Coach Ireland and did all of his basketball practices and basically his best friend and probably maybe the greatest coach in Iowa high school basketball history is John Carl sitting to the right of me. He won a state championship at Lincoln High School, and he's probably forgot more about basketball than most of us know. And since we're right in the middle of basketball season, I thought, you know, I was talking to Dale Hanke, my friends. I go, who better? And he says, yeah, get John Carl on there. So, Mr. Carl, welcome.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah,
thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. Well, I certainly have known Coach for a long time. He was coaching back in the day when I played, and I could probably tell a couple stories, but we'll let him tell some stories first
of all.
So, but how you doing these days, John? You're still living around Des Moines, aren't you?
Yes, still on the south side of Des Moines. Getting along pretty good. Old age has caught up, but other than that...
Well, you look great.
Well, I still work out, but not as often.
I bet you could still beat Johnny at three throws if we went out here right now, too. Yeah. I'd put my money on Coach here.
Well, how many years did you coach, John?
Well, in all, probably 25. But I had three, with regard to basketball, I had three jobs. First one was 2 years at the second smallest school in the state. And the last 11 was at the second largest school at Lincoln High in Des Moines, and in between my hometown at Knoxville. So I went from the small school to right in the middle to the largest, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We certainly had a lot of success at Lincoln. Was it 75 that you won the state title? Is that right?
Yes, that was it. So I had some talent there. I can remember talking to my mother about it, and she said, I could coach that team and win the state. You probably could.
Yeah. Yeah, I love going down there and to the Roundhouse, and I was, of course, there the night that they renamed it John Carl Arena, which was John Carl Court, and we were down there, and it was a really, really cool night, and I still bump into people that like my friend Stephanie Livingston, and she was there that night, and we're great friends, and she talks about how much she loves Coach Carl, and her dad played for you.
Yeah, her dad was one of my favorite players of all time.
You know?
He was the one at the state tournament, first game into the state tournament, a forward, John Thorpe, who had played 60-some games for me, tore his knee out, and he couldn't play. So we put in Denny Livingston to replace him, and he just was absolutely outstanding. He probably more than any other one person at the time helped us win the state. His defense and offense both was just unreal. So, and he's remained, his automobile shop is just about five blocks from where I live, and he stops by all the time. We're still very, very close.
That's what's neat about is these high school sports is the relationships that you make and keep, you know, your whole life. I'm still close with all of my former teachers and coaches. But I got to ask you, John, this is the one thing I was going to say is, you know, you coached and back in the, you know, before the 70s, but you coached in the 70s and were very successful. And I'll never forget, you know, that the one time we finally got you for Larry but it just seems to me like the game's changed so much and I know how good a defense you played, and I know what Larry, you know, always preached defense. I mean, when you were at his game, within the first 15 seconds you'd hear ball side, you know, right away, And, you know, it just, I'd be doing the clock and he'd tell me, hey, Hot Rod, get that clock moving, milk the clock a little bit, you know. But why is the game so much more, I hate to say it, but boring today and so much less scoring?
We were very fortunate, Larry and I. We were not only close friends and helped each other out all the time, but we spent a lot of time with some very great coaches. We spent one day 6 hours with Dan Smith from North Carolina. And I spent 3 nights staying all night at Lou Olson's house in Iowa City. We talked basketball to 3 a.m. And I was probably as close a friend to Maury John and Drake than you could probably imagine. And we spent hours just talking about this and about that. And what happens is, if you're fortunate enough to be around great coaching, you can learn a lot, which you can use and help you at the level you're coaching. If not, then you just pretty much do whatever you think you can see and understand as a coach. And at the time I was coaching at Lincoln, there were a lot of great coaches. Bert Adams at Hoover, George Duvall at Ames, George Funk at Marshalltown, and Larry Ireland, and several more that I don't need to mention. But if you're not going to do the job, those kind of coaches are going to beat you. So as I spoke at a lot of clinics from Bozeman, Montana to Columbus, Ohio, I told a lot of coaches, if you're not going to spend 10 hours a day, 10 months out of the year, you're wasting your time. And if you're not going to pick up from coaches that really know what they're doing, you're wasting your time. And if you do that, why, it pays off. If you don't, why, you go by the wayside sooner.
Yeah.
Well, I know Larry's teams, you know, love to play that hard-nosed man-to-man defense, and he was a big fan of Bobby Knight's teams. And I think your teams are pretty similar to that. Did your teams ever play zone? Did you ever play much zone?
We would on occasion. Probably the first time I did that was in 1977, I think it was. We went to a clinic, Larry and I, in Indiana, and talked to this coach who was really first coach to start the zone that was like a man-to-man, and it wasn't really a zone, but it was, and then you kind of went into a man-to-man set, and teams didn't know much what to do with that for a long time. It took about 2 or 3 years for even the college coaches were coming up with offenses that were capable of handling that.
Yeah, it just. But what? Why do you think scoring's so low these days? I mean, because you go to these 4A games, and honestly, you know, my son started for Bob Fontana for 2 years, and in the CIML, there would be games that seriously, it'd be in the 30s to the 40s, and you know, and you go watch Ames play, and that coach is a hell of a coach. You know, I know they got the shot clock now, but you miss a shot, it might be a minute before they shot.
Yes. It one thing about that high school basketball at that time was there was no shot clock, and you could take forever doing this or doing that. And in talking to a lot of those outstanding coaches, they got this across to me, and which I, thank goodness, if you're not as talented as the teams you're going to face, then you're going to get beat a lot. So how do you get to be as talented as the teams you're going to face? You go around to those people that know how to develop skills. When I was a freshman at Drake, John Bennington was the head coach. He was there just 1 year and then transferred to Michigan State, and then he passed away early. But on Saturday morning, he took 4 of us freshmen and took us to the gym and showed us how to go one-on-one and beat anybody that was facing us. And he worked with us quite a bit of that. And when I transferred out of Drake to Central College, I didn't worry about anybody guarding me. I knew that if I got into a one-on-one situation, that I could beat that person. And so when I started high school, that's what I knew had to be done. They had to learn how to beat their man one-on-one. And there are several things involved there. And first one is, you got to be able to shoot the lights out. And that is all technique. And I joke, not jokingly, but I told a lot of the teams I coached, nobody's ever shot better than me. I mean, they couldn't beat me in a game of horse. So if you want to try it, you can. Well, learning to be a better shooter is like when you're playing golf, learning to strike the ball better. You can practice a lot, but that's not going to make you a better shooter or a better golfer unless you're doing it well. So when you shoot, rather than say, okay, we're going to practice for 10 minutes on this, what you want to do is you want to shoot till you make and shoot till you miss, and then continue to shoot until you've made at least 10 in a row, and then 15 in a row, and so forth. I remember telling the players when I was coaching, the best I ever did was 44 in a row. Now, I happen to know today, from a year ago when I heard this interview, Seth Curry made 77 in a row. And that's how you get to be great. And I don't care what it is you're practicing. You do it over and over until you master it.
Yeah.
And once you got 10 players that can do that, you're going to be a pretty good team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Particularly,
their number one offense was fast break.
Well, yes.
You
yeah. Yeah. Well, they've moved
it. Fast break before they ever did anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. We,
and they
we,
could do it better than anybody. Well, they could score before they ever knew what happened.
Yeah.
We have John Carl Jr. chiming in here. He's not on the mic, so if you can't hear what he's saying, yeah, he's saying that his number one offense was a fast break. So
yeah, they could move it too, man. They were electric. And of course, John's got his boy Johnny, who was just a hell of a basketball player. You know, for Ankeny, if we come out with the all-time Ankeny basketball team yet?
That was the first one that we did, yeah. Right after when COVID hit, yeah.
Was Johnny on there somewhere?
No, and he still tells me about it to this
day. Wow, I can't believe it. I can't believe it, you know. And what's, you know, and what's really, I got to give a little shout-out because the reason I got to know Coach Carl so well is I'm really good friends with his daughter, Christy, who happens to be 60 years old today. I can't believe little Christy's 60 years old, but she must have not done what John said about shooting all the time because she was a guard,
yes.
A hell of a guard for Dick Rasmussen, yeah. And that she didn't get across half court. You know, John, could you, John Jr., could you imagine if you never got to shoot? But I got a question for Coach Carl here. So I know the answer to it, but people that are listening don't. So the whole time that you coached, who was the best player you ever coached?
Name was Frank Smith, and unfortunately, I only got to coach him a year and a half. He was a sophomore at North, and he was not only kicked off the team, but out of school, and he had been for many, many years kicked out of school, and he couldn't handle authority, and he didn't like any demands or things of that nature. So the first day I saw him, I asked him, I said, you want to shoot a game of horse? And he said, yes. And so we did, and I won HORS, E to nothing. And he said, I want another game. I said, okay. And after five games of HORS, E to nothing, I said, Frank, let me ask you a question. You want to learn to shoot as good as me? Yes, I do, he said. I said, well, then, you're going to come every day, and we're going to work for the next 2 weeks on just shooting and so forth. And he said, okay. So we did, and he became a really great shooter. And we were riding home one day, and I said, Frank, you think you're any good shooting the ball now? And he said, oh, man, I'm really good. And I said, well, there's a lot more in this game I could teach you if you gave me the same attention you did for the shooting. And he said, Coach, I'm going to be honest. I've been watching your practices before, and you're too mean. I couldn't handle it. If you get on me the way you get on those kids, I'd quit. I said, well, let's make this deal. You be on the team, and you'll be doing whatever it is, and if I don't like what I see, I'm going to send a sub in for you. You come over beside me, and I'm going to tell you, you better get your knees bent on defense, or you better know where you are on the floor and so forth. And if you don't, then you're not going to play anymore. And he said, okay, I'll go along with that because I don't get yelled at or anything like that. And so it turned out to be just a very good thing because, well, let me tell you why he's the best player. He averaged 30 points a game. That's high for a lot of good players. He averaged 30 points a game. Secondly, he averaged 17 rebounds a game.
Wow.
Now that, yeah, that's a wow.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of guys. But he averaged 17 rebounds a game. And third, he averaged 5 steals a game. Now that would probably be the best for a lot of players.
Yeah.
To get, but he averaged 5 steals, 17 rebounds, and 30 points. We played a big game in the district against Hoover, and we were lucky to win. And when it was over, the newspaper reporter said, Coach, that was quite a game. When did you think you had it won? I said, well, I was sitting in the office. I looked out the window, and I saw Frank coming with his bag, and I thought, we got
yeah.
How tall a guy was he? Was he like about
6'3"?
6'3"? Yeah, not a big guy then. Not a real big guy.
He went to Burlington Junior College, played for Spooner.
Wow. And,
I flew down with him, and Spooner said, well, we're going to get a game up here. I've got 5 or 6 of my college players, and there's 4 or 5 high school players, and we're going to choose up and have as equals we can, and in front of some contributors and so forth here at the gym. I said, Coach, do me a favor. Don't mix them up. Have your players play against 4 high school players and Frank. Well, he said, I want it to be. I said, do me a favor. Just have your best players play 4 high school players and Frank. He said, okay. Frank just kicked their butts out. He just beat him by himself. It's unbelievable. Spooner came up to me and says, gosh, I've got to have that kid. And he said, so I hope I can convince him, he said. So when Frank come out, he said, Frank, I want to show you something. He went down to the trophy case, and he said, see, this is a big basketball school, and we've won a lot of trophies, and it's the most important sport here at Burlington. And he said, I want you to know that I know Coach Carl, and I've spent a lot of time with him, and I coach like him. And the relationship you and I have will be the same as it is with Coach Carl. There was a pause, and Frank said, Coach Carl's the meanest son of a bitch in the world, and I'll never play for anybody like him again.
That's funny.
Scooter looked at me and had a funny look on his face, and I said, Frank said he's coming here.
Yeah, I love
and
it.
And he took him to the Nationals 2 years in a row.
And Frank turned out to be just great, didn't he, as a human being?
He had trouble, and I got together with a lawyer and his girlfriend at the time, and they moved to Minnesota, to Bloomington, and started a whole new career and everything, and it was just great. He turned out real good. Just a couple months ago, I got a call from him, from his wife. She wondered if I would bring my wife and meet him at his sister's funeral. and his sister worked for Mercy Hospital. And so we said yes, and he went there. And the reason is he wanted me to meet his daughter. His daughter was all Big Ten 3 years and made the Hall of Fame at Illinois.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
Played about 8 or 9 years in Europe, professional ball. And she said, well, I wanted to meet the guy who coached my dad because he told me, he taught me the same things you taught him. And I said, quite obvious, you learned them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I watched her play, too. It's incredible. So if Frank Smith is the best player you ever coached, I've got to ask, because a lot of people won't know this, but I've heard it. Who's the best athlete you've ever seen?
The best athlete?
Yeah.
Well, I think the best all-around athlete, for high school particularly, was a player at Lincoln by the name of Phil Heyman. Phil was a tremendous football player, had a full ride to Iowa City. He threw the shot put about 50-some feet. He was leading scorer on a high school basketball team a year before I came, and he was just an all-around great athlete.
Yeah. What about a guy that I've heard about that is probably most people haven't? Do you ever, is his name like Frank A. Bailey?
Frank A. Bailey was a veteran of World War II, and he was stationed in a big hospital in Knoxville, which was about 1,500 patients with post-traumatic stress. And he, along with other patients at that time, once they got to be under control pretty good and life was doing better, they were allowed to come into town on Saturday mornings and shop or do whatever they wanted to. And Frank was one of those that got to do that. And he was a little skinny guy, wore a big Stetson hat, looked like a T walking down the street. But we kids would stop him and ask him questions because he told some fantastic stories about him being the greatest athlete that ever lived.
Yeah.
And he started every story one time, and somewhere in the middle of the story, he would say his name, Frank A. Bailey, the greatest athlete that ever lived. And he ended every story, thanks, Frank.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Yeah, those are the, I'd never heard it, but they're the, I got to listen to a bunch of Frank A. Bailey stories here about 2 months ago, and they're incredible. And Ted Leverance, I just met a little bit ago, I talked with him, and he coached with Mr. Carl here and said to tell him hello, but he goes, oh man, he goes, you don't realize, for 3 years, John and I ran. He goes, we'd go out, and I'd sit down, I'd listen to John. I know every Frank A. Bailey story there is. Ted's favorite, though, was when he was playing baseball.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
He said that he started it out one time.
Yeah.
In Guam, on a field that had been renovated to a baseball diamond. And he said, having to pitch the first and third game, the second game found me on first base. Well, they had a player get up and hit a routine single, but our center fielder, clumsy as he was, bobbled the ball. So this guy just rounded first and flew right into second base. And sliding in there, he drove a steel spike up the middle of his back, and he was paralyzed from the waist on down. But nobody knew what to do, except one, Frank A. the greatest athlete that ever lived. So I walked over, carefully meticulized the situation, took my trusty pocket knife out, bent over, and very carefully remove that steel spike. Why no more got it out? He jumped up, stole third base, turned around, said thanks.
Greatest athlete that ever lived, man.
That's
you know, but you know, gosh, we were just talking about the other day. How long's Larry been gone now?
14 years.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
I remember because we, Ted and Dale and Kiss and Larry and I and several others, would go out to Vegas every year. And we would have a great time. But this year, my wife's father was having his 80th birthday, and I couldn't go to Vegas. So I went to Missouri to his 80th birthday, and on the way back, I got a phone call long distance saying that Larry had passed away.
Yeah.
And so I knew that because it was on my father-in-law's 80th birthday, and he just died recently at 94, so I know it's been 14 years.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, he was a fantastic coach, wasn't he?
Larry, oh boy. And he was just a fantastic guy.
Loyal. Yeah. Loyal man. As loyal as you could ever meet. And
I remember when he called me one day and he said, I've got two job openings. And I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, right here at Anchorage, I can either coach football or basketball. What do you think I ought to do? I said, my Lord, the players on that basketball team are 6'7", 6'8", 6'4", and 6 foot. I said, if you don't take the basketball job, you made a mistake. And so he did. And he and I studied the game and worked at the game. And I had my practices every day were 2:30 to 5. And a lot of times his were 5 to 7. And so I would coach my practice and then race out to Ankeny and help him with his or observe it at least. And he was outstanding. Yeah, he was glad.
Yeah, great guy. And then the other thing that I get brought up with Kiss is I think you and Larry and Kiss and a couple others spent some time officiating football, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Larry and I started out as a referee started as an umpire, and I got tired of doing that one time, and so we switched, and that's the way we went until we decided we couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, Kiss told me a couple good stories. He mentioned one time, I think you were at Adel, and they must only had a goal post at one end of the field, and the other one didn't, and he said you were there, and they had scored, and you said, don't you want to go to the other side to kick? And the kid goes, no, we're going to go for two. He goes, don't you think maybe they're going to know it? I thought that was pretty good. And then the other one was the time that some kid got mad and spiked the ball, and it bounced up and hit Larry right in his male genitalia. Yeah. And he's trying to get ready to blow the whistle, but Kiss said everybody was too busy laughing. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Kiss. Yeah, it's...
And we went down, and before he came to Ankeny, refereed the Melchior Pizzetti's teams down there.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, like Larry, an outstanding coach.
Yeah, Jerry said when he get up at Melchior Dallas, he just had the light, he just turned the lights off, though. That's what he told me. I got a funny for you with Jerry, John, and you'll appreciate this. So about 2 years ago, we were watching Bob Fontana's team, and we're at the, in kind of that north end zone sitting there, and it's myself and Jerry and Margaret Pizzetti, and my wife was there, and I think Dan, he's back doing, covering all the sports, and Jerry calls me Hot Rod. He goes, you know Hot Rod? He goes, God, I've been doing this a long time. He said, down at Melchior Dallas I first started, I have somebody come up and say, hey, coach, you coach my older brother. And then it was, hey, coach, you coach my uncle. Then I got, hey, coach, you coach my dad. Then he looks at Greg McColl that's playing basketball, and he says, then I get, hey, coach, you coach my grandpa. True story. Greg McCullough's grandpa played for Jerry at Melchior Dallas. I mean, yeah, it shows Jerry, and he's going strong. I think Jerry's probably 80. My mom's 82. I think Jerry's probably
85.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he's going strong. Looks great,
Oh, he does.
You look, yeah. But you look great, John. I mean, I just, I just would I'd like to just be able to coach and be put my name on it and have you come run everything for me. I could, you know, get you and me recruiting. Oh my God, we take over the state. We have Johnny as our assistant. We put Johnny in charge of defense. What do you think, John?
At least for me.
Yeah. No.
He'd be good.
Oh, he's fantastic, you know. But no, it's great. And, you know, most of us that grew up in the 70s, you know, Lincoln basketball and the Roundhouse. I mean, there was one in Marshalltown, but there was a lot of mystique in just going to a place like that, because it's like going to Vets when you played there the first time. It was big and open and beautiful, and you know, you go down to his teams and they just knock the tar out of you.
Well, you know, and you mentioned it earlier, the game changes. I mean, I know you know this, but years ago, throwing a pass in football was illegal. And there was no three-point line in basketball a long time ago. And things change. And as they change, who do you look to? You look to who's ever the best. I mean, right now in football, if you're not paying attention to Saban in Alabama, you know.
Yeah.
And the same thing's true. As the game changes, the people that most coaches follow are the college stars. And today, the game is primarily dribble, drive, and dish. In other words, they run a weave out front, and they try and drive towards the basket, and if people help out, they kick it out there and shoot the three. And that's the biggest part of the game. But there's different ways of doing this. In the olden days, guys like Maury John, I learned a lot of offense from a guy like Maury John. We were close. Albie had a great team, and we played them at home, and they beat us. And 2 weeks later, we had to go down there. And I run into Maury, and we sat down and talked for about 2 or 3 hours, and he diagrammed two plays that would take advantage of Albia's defense. And we went down there and beat him to win the conference.
Wow.
And that's not doing it today. I mean, I don't mean to be critical, but the other night, Iowa Hawkeyes got beat 32 points in the second half by a team that wasn't even ranked in the top 300.
I know.
And if you're just doing whatever you feel like doing on the floor, and drive when you want to drive, or pull out and shoot the three. Today, for instance, I watched Waukee play Northwest Waukee.
Yeah.
And they're both good basketball teams, but a lot of what they do is pretty much up to them with nothing they have to perfect. Whereas the offenses that Maury John taught me and other coaches, and some moves that were unbelievable. Post players that play post low have three moves they need to learn. Garcia from Iowa never learned them until he was a senior. Those three moves are taught over and over and over till you can just run them without even thinking about it. And then our rule was very simple. We're going to throw the ball into you, and you're either going to score or get fouled. We didn't kick it out to a three. We didn't kick it this way,
yeah,
and so forth. So, luckily, beginning with Mark Gottfried in Knoxville and then Jim Thorpe at Lincoln, I coached 6 straight All-State post players in a row.
Wow.
And that's like Frank Bailey. I mean, Frank Smith teaching his daughter to do that. Another one you probably wouldn't realize, his name was Richard Bates.
Oh, yeah.
I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, I remember him well.
He went on to play at Creighton. But his son was the most valuable basketball player in the Big Ten at the University of Ohio State. His name was Keita Bates Diop.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, and so he just learned what his dad taught him.
That's all. You got to do something. Otherwise, you just get beat.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you, you know, and you look at it like doing stuff, you know, good. I mean, you talk about putting the time in. And I can tell you right now, a guy that learned a lot from you and Larry was Bob Fontana. And I'll tell you, you're not going to outwork Bob. I mean, Bob puts his time in. He works hard, and he's pretty much, you're talking about doing it 10 months, that's Bob for you. But, I mean, I look what he's done this year with a team that wasn't supposed to have any talent. My God, they're playing well.
Yeah.
He tells me they're fun to coach, too.
He's an outstanding coach.
Yeah.
I can remember when he coached at Carlisle. And I'd go over and watch practices and games. And he went there to Kennedy. I didn't get up that much, but I went up a couple times.
Yeah.
And I watched him work with his players at Simpson College at an off-season camp once. And he's just outstanding.
He coached right after you left with the guy that followed you, I think, at Lincoln, didn't he? Didn't he coach for Tom Lee?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because he's in one of those pictures up on the not the wall, not the great big one with, you know, everybody there. You know, Chris Kern, I always remembered he had that big afro type thing, you know, too, man. Yeah, he was a good one, too, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Chris Kern was.
Yeah.
He was an excellent player.
But yeah, it was great. You got anything you want to add, John?
Well, yeah, one of the things that I remember about Coach is, of course, you know, I didn't play for John, but, you know, playing for Larry, a lot of times we would practice with you guys, or we would go down to the roundhouse, we'd scrimmage you guys, or you'd come out to our camps in the summertime and you'd help run the camps or do some coaching there. And one thing I can say about you is that you were an honest guy. You would tell it like it is. And you told me one time, it was before my summer year, you said, "Holm, you got a chance to play this year, but you got to lose some weight." So you told it like it was. I took that to heart. I lost a little bit of weight, got in shape, and, you know, I got to play that year. So that was a lot of fun. And but yeah, I remember a lot of those hard-nosed practices we had down at the roundhouse against your teams. They were always tough to play against.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, it's sad. I just still wish, you know, I'd give a lot of money right now if we could have Larry sitting across from us, having a beer, talking with John, talking sports, you know. But but unfortunately life goes on, and it's, you know, it's because of stuff like this. We keep Larry's memory alive, and my God, the guy retired with 498 wins. I mean, 498 wins. I mean, that's...
He was outstanding.
I mean, my God, I mean, that's where people in Anki don't realize how fortunate we've got. We've got Larry, 498 wins. We've got Jerry Pizzetti with, how many has he got, 340?
Oh, he's over 400 now, isn't he?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, my wife made the cake for him. And then, you know, and then, my God, look what Scott DeYoung's done up here.
Yeah, I think he's over 700 now, yeah.
Yeah, with how many state titles?
Yeah.
Five?
Oh, more than that. I think seven or eight now, all together.
Yeah, I mean, so people just, you know, and the average person sits back and they want to, I'm going to say the word bitch and moan and stuff, and they know, they see what I always told Kiss. You know, I can tell you this, Dave. I can sit here and I can see what's wrong with the team, but I don't know how to fix it. That's the problem. Anybody can see what's wrong. Well, they're not doing that right, you know, but how do you fix it? Well, the good coaches like John and Larry and Jerry and, when you were at Lincoln, I mean, look how good Cecil Rhodes' football program was down there. I mean, it was one of the last teams ever won the Metro, you know, when Cece was there and, you know, and his son went off to be a fantastic coach.
Well, one thing was because we had an outstanding staff at Lincoln High, I mean, our musical program and our band were as good as it was in the Midwest. It didn't make any difference what the program was. It was tremendous during that time period. And the entire student body celebrated by joining to support each of those programs. We'd have a golf meet. We'd have 40, 50 people out there walking play. We played Hoover once, and it was so crowded. I mean, nobody could get in hardly after 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were told by the fire chief that we could never do that again. You can't have it like this. The stairwells were all full. Everything was this way, and so we started renting the Vets Auditorium. And one night we played Hoover at the Vets Auditorium, and that same night, Ames, Iowa State Cyclones had a home game, and the Iowa Hawkeyes had a home game. There were three big games. The largest crowd was at the Vets Auditorium watching Hoover and Lincoln. 10,000 or better.
I wow. know. Yeah. It's amazing. I remember, you know, I remember in Ankeny playing down at Vets, you know.
Yes.
We played you in Sub-State at Vets. Yeah, when you had Richard Bates. That was at Vets, believe it or not.
Yep.
And it was packed.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but kids, they didn't have their dang phones and their internet. And, you know, I mean, they went to ball games and they supported their friends. And, you know, I hate to go back in time, but I kind of liked it back then.
Well, you know.
I'm not going to lie to you.
You know, things become what you demand they are. That's what I learned from some great coaches. And while I was coaching at Knoxville, Greater Lincoln, I had some help financially, and we bought all the players on the team a three-piece suit and tie and so forth. And that's what we wore. And when we went to Lincoln, a booster who had a good job and made a lot of money asked me what I could do, what he could do to help. And I said, I wish we had three-piece suits here. We did. From then on, every game, we were in three-piece suit. And when you go in to watch the girls play or the sophomores play, you all sit together. You don't run around, do this, do that. And when it's time, you all get up together and you walk out and go to the locker room. And that's the way life is. And it's a demand, and a lot of coaches do it differently. I know one thing I learned from Maura John and Lute Olson and so forth. Our practices were at 2:30. If you stepped on the floor at 2:31, you didn't practice. You have rules, and you live by those rules. And if you can't, why, you're not a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I've certainly seen a lot of changes over the years, you know, maybe within the players, maybe the way some of the parents react to the way their players are coached. You know, if you coached today, I don't know if you could change, but do you think you'd have to change just because of the way the world has changed?
Well, they say so. A lot of people have said, Coach Carl coached the way he coached. He'd be fired about it. We can half into it. But and that's because you got to be demanding. But at the same time, you got to take consideration of the athletes themselves. I had a very good team at Knoxville. Matter of fact, we beat Lincoln in the district the year before I came to Lincoln. And I had one player on the team. His brother was one of the track stars, Randy Wilson. And his name was Denny Wilson. And he was nothing like Randy or his other brother, Denny. And his mom came to me one day and said, Coach, you're too hard on Denny. He can't take it anymore. He's going to quit. That's all there is to it. I said, really? Yep. He just can't handle how abusive you get to be. I said, all right. So the next day in practice, I was as hard on Denny as I've ever been any time ever. And just kept going on him more and more. And I could see in his face he was ready to quit. And I said, that's it, practice is over. Everybody get showered up, do it right away. And so I called my assistant coach over and I said, why don't you do me a favor? I want you to go downstairs into the locker room and watch what's going on. Talk to Denny. Don't talk about basketball. Talk about anything you want. But keep him until every player is gone. And then let him go. So he did. I turned all the lights out in the hallway outside the gym, went over and sat in a chair. And I waited, and pretty soon, here come Denny. Opened the door, and he walked out. And he was just slumbering along. And I said, well, that's it, Denny. You win. I did everything I could today to get you upset to the point where you couldn't take it anymore. But you beat me. You beat me hard. Congratulations. I'll see you. It wouldn't make any difference the rest of the year what I got on him about. He'd just grin and wink and go on about his business.
Yeah.
But he played on a really good team.
Yeah, that's all. You know, Bob Fontana says it all the time. You know, you're going to be a man a lot longer than you're ever going to be a ball player. That's the thing he says. And I can tell you, my son Johnny saw play, and you'd never think I could have an athletic kid, but Jackson was 6'4" and could just jump out of a gym and dunk a basketball like no other. But I tell you, he played so hard, and brass would come to games. And I told Jackson, I said, you know what, Larry, you'd have been Larry's kind of player, because he never complained. He played hard, never showed up an official, and he'd get in your face, you know. And he and Bob was hard on him. Bob goes, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm a little harder on Jackson than some of the others, because, you know, some of them can't take it, and I know he can, you know. And you gotta know what buttons to push, you know. It's hard.
You'd like to have them all be the same, but they're not.
No.
They come from different personalities. And, you know, I can remember the first practice I ever went to was in seventh grade. And I couldn't make a left-hand layup. And I come home, and I was whimpering around. And my dad said, what's the problem? I said, I can't make left-hand layups. He said, well, what the hell are you doing here? I got up and went back to school. I had to sneak in through the window to get in there. Got an old basketball, turned the lights on because I knew where that was, and I shot left-hand layups for the next 2 hours. And that's kind of the attitude you got to have, but sometimes it needs to be created by whoever the coach is.
Yeah. You think we can get him on the bench again? What do you think?
I don't know.
Get him out of retirement? Get JC out of retirement?
One of the main reasons I retired from coaching was I went to visit a friend who was serious and in the hospital. So through my activity while I was there with him, the nurse said, you know what? I need to take your blood pressure. I said, okay. She did. She said, you need to see your doctor tomorrow first thing. I said, what? She said, your blood pressure is 180 over 110. And you can't do that. And for the next three or four years, was my big concern, you know, how to get that down. And you just, I went through a lot of things, but they pretty much told me, I ended up in Mayo for a week, that coaching right now would not be a good thing.
Yeah.
So I did come back and help John Labonia, and that was a team that Larry won.
Yeah.
And that was a great, great game, right? The last second, we at Lincoln chose to switch defenses and went into a zone. And Olson, who works for, what's his name?
All Ball.
Right,
All Ball.
Yep.
Yeah, he's a sharp kid. I always liked him. He recognized it, called the offense immediately, two passes, and they shot and made it, and won by 1 point.
Yeah.
Played in the state finals.
Yeah.
The only thing that made me mad was we played the next day, Sioux City, for third place, and beat them easy. And Larry ends up losing to Valley by 1 point or two.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, geez.
Valley had a good coach back then. What was his name, man?
Bill Harris.
Yeah, right. Exactly right. Yeah. I think, is he still coaching? I think I saw him.
No, but he still plays golf with Blank.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you beat him?
Oh, I quit playing golf.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, this has been great.
It has been, yeah. But appreciate you coming in, Coach. We probably should wrap things up here and let you get on your way.
Okay. I got one last.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got one last fun story. This is a classic. So, John was there, but back in the day, it was in July, and it was in 1974. And Jerry and I think John had played. They'd played golf, and Jerry had gone home, but a bunch of the guys decided they were going to go down to some bar called the Papillon and have a beer. I think's where they were. And anyway, Ankeny, it started storming. And somebody got a hold of John and said, hey, Ankeny's been hit by a big tornado. Larry, part of your house is gone. The neighbors down the street are gone. We better get back to Ankeny. And Larry said, yeah, we got to finish this. We got to finish this beer first. Yeah. But yeah, that was the night of the tornado, John.
Yep.
And it didn't miss you really by a lot for having bad damage.
What preceded that was that very night, umpired a girls softball game at Carlisle. And we stopped at Pantheon for a beer.
Yeah.
And then we got the call.
Yeah, tornado, you know. Yeah, I mean that.
It hit Pizzetti's house up the street.
Yeah, Jerry's the one that found the Wallace White family in the street. Jerry said he came out of his house. And there was a house next door to him with three or four young kids, and it looked demolished. So Jerry goes, oh, my gosh. And they were there, and they were fine. And then Jerry said he stumbled upon two houses to the north of him where the White family lived. And they picked their house up and threw them basically down in the middle of Trilene Drive. And Jerry said, I'll be honest with you, Hot Rod, I thought maybe the whole town was gone.
Oh, yeah.
Because he witnessed it.
They wouldn't let anybody in or out of town for a while.
I know.
But my basketball team was in Ames at Cyclone Camp.
Oh.
And when they heard about it, they all come down. And the police let them in, and they all came, and there were 14 of them, and they picked up everything in the yard in a half hour.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. I think they thought they would get out of a lot of hard work.
Oh, that's good. Johnny, were you out there helping pick stuff up? Well, that's old enough to be picking stuff up. Yeah, yeah.
Larry said to me one day, he said, we need to start a basketball camp and need to get it going. And I said, well, if you do, you got to have it. Coaches at all levels, right up, so it's continued right through on the way. He said, okay, let's begin. We'll begin with the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I said, no, you got to begin 4th, 5th. Oh, I said, why? I said, Johnny's in 4th grade.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Did you get any of those Camp Champ t-shirts, Johnny? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so you graduated with Dan, didn't you?
He was 1 year behind me.
Okay.
We played together, yeah.
Was he pretty tough to guard in high school?
He got better over the years.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well,
you didn't like Johnny guarding you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, let's wrap this up. We're almost on an hour here, so that's probably been long enough enough of Coach's time. But, hey, really appreciate you coming today, Coach.
I'm glad you invited me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we got him here on his daughter's birthday today, 60 years old for Christy today.
She's 2 years older than me. It's my 58th today.
I know. So. It's Dan's birthday, too. Can you believe it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's today, yeah. Well,
it's a great day. It's a great day. Dan home and Christy, so you guys are 118 today.
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
that's something else.
Yeah. But thanks, Coach Carl. It's always a pleasure when I see you, my friend.
Yep. Thank you, sir. All right. Well, we're back. We're going to kick around a couple other topics here before we sign off for the day. We want to thank Coach Carl again for joining us. That was a lot of fun. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. We mentioned that it was his daughter Christy's 60th birthday today. I don't know if we mentioned it. It's my birthday as well today. I'm 58, so...
Yeah.
We're going to be celebrating at the Clipper later tonight, so if you happen to listen to this, if you want to come up and join us tonight, we'll be there. So, but anyway, Rod, how's everything else going for you?
You know, it's we had a great Christmas. You know, it's beautiful out today. I mean, you know, I didn't even have to put my winter coat on. It's we're kind of in that lull in basketball right now. I mean, so you know, besides working on some of these all-time teams, I mean, you finally get a little bit of a sabbatical from a
little bit
from coaching, you know, excuse me, from covering game after game. But, you know, going to, let's just real quick talk since we're in basketball season, you know, the Jags and the Hawks, you know, they played and I, you know, right now it looks like Bob's Centennial team's really strong. And, you know, the Ankeny team, I think is kind of beat up and they lost. I know the one kid that was good had a appendix out?
Well, I mean, they lost a few players. I mean, yeah. You know, Weedy broke his leg, so he's out for the year. And Patton was sick. I'm not sure exactly what he was sick with, but it might have been that. He's supposed to be back here after the break.
He'll help him a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And then JJ didn't come back.
Right. He left early to go to Iowa State. So, I mean, yeah, they certainly had a lot of, you know, players to make up for there. I thought maybe they'd struggle a little bit. I mean, Bob's team has certainly been a surprise. I didn't see this coming. I mean, with the talent they had coming back, you just couldn't have forecasted this.
No, but everybody's, you know, playing their role well and playing really good. And I will say one thing, you know, I went and watched, I'm watching a lot of my friend's kids play now. So I've got one at Polk and one at Waukee Northwest. And I happened to catch the Ankeny versus Waukee Northwest game. And, you know, it was amazing because the night before, Ankeny had to play Indianola, who's very good. And that was a pretty close game and a really physical game. So then I still don't get it. They go from them on a Monday to Waukee Northwest on a Tuesday. Then they played somebody on Friday and then went to Sioux City or something like that on Saturday. So they had four games.
Yeah. Just a brutal schedule. Yeah.
And like a six-game stretch. Yeah. And you know, I could tell against Waukee Northwest, you know, in that game, they were gassed. I mean, you know, you play the night before in a really physical game. So, I mean, I don't know how that scheduling, I don't know how you can have four games in a week like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure when they made that schedule, too, maybe they thought they'd have some of these other players that aren't there. But
that's still a lot of games.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you know, especially, you know, as good as Indianola is, they've got that Kingery kid that's, you know, good. And then Waukee Northwest, in my opinion, I think they're the best team in the state.
So far they are, yeah.
Yeah, and then you've, you know, and you know, Scott's, you know, had a nice win versus the Hawks, and Drew's doing Drew's a hell of a coach down for Ankeny.
Oh, yeah.
He's got them playing pretty good basketball, too.
Yeah, they've struggled a little bit. They just don't seem to be quite in sync yet. I think they'll get better.
I think they got some nice pieces, though.
They do. And the newcomer, Jayla Williams, is certainly going to help them.
That's number 22, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, she's really good. And their guard is fantastic. And, they've got – and who's the other – there's the other gal that they have – and I can't believe I can't think of her last name now, but she had sisters that played there too.
Oh, Pitts?
No, her mom's from Fort Dodge. Who's one of the starters? It's kind of a.
Well, there's Savannah Gage.
No.
And Carson Jacks.
No.
I don't know who else you're talking about.
This is for girls, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then Jasmine Mosier's in the post.
Okay.
So I'm not sure who you're thinking of.
Well, I'll think of it before long, but I wish I could Google it real quick here. But, I can't, you know, there's one more that – who had a couple sisters that played a couple years ago?
You're talking about the Shattervans?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking of. Yeah, Shattervan. I couldn't – that. Is she a senior this year?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zoe, and then her sister Sydney and Hannah played.
Yeah, they've always done a nice job for you know, for Drew, and so that's kind of fun. You know, I don't watch any NBA, so I couldn't. You know, I guess the Lakers played on Christmas Day, but you know, I
haven't watched much of them myself.
You know, I'm still kind of in a funk because you know my Dolphins are on a four game losing streak, and Tua got hurt again, and. You know, and then they find a way to lose. And my buddy Tony Rhodes, he's a Vikings fan, and I'll give him credit, man. That team finds a way to win every week. I mean, we're watching them on Saturday, and they trot this old dude out to kick a field goal, and it's 61 yards, and sure enough, he makes it. You know, it's been you know, and your Chiefs are playing really good football right now.
They are, yeah. I like their chances.
You know, we won't talk again till after the Super Bowl. But Who do you see in the Super Bowl, Dan?
Well, I think the NFC is it's a toss up. It's a crapshoot. I mean the Eagles certainly look like the best team all around. Maybe the 49ers, but the Vikings. You don't want to get into a close game with the Vikings because they'll find a way to win it.
I know.
You know, if you're going to beat them, you better beat them good. Because
I agree with you. And then I'll tell you the other thing too is I mean if the Packers can somehow sneak in it, I mean say what you want. I don't want to have to go up against Rodgers. I mean, he's crafty, and you know, don't be surprised if they don't get in there and he doesn't find a way to win a game.
Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
You know, and then and the AFC, it's you know, I think it was a three-team race. I think it's Buffalo and Kansas City and the Bengals.
Right.
Those are the, you know, I don't see anybody not in those three.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either.
But if I had to put my money on it today, you know, it's all going to come down to home field advantage. And, you know, the Chiefs have, I think, two really winnable games that they, you know, they're favored in both. And the Bills still have to go to Cincinnati. And Cincinnati was really lucky to have beaten the Patriots last week. They got up on them big. And,
they were, yeah.
You know, but, you know, if all of a sudden, you know, they lose to Cincinnati, then you're going through Kansas City.
Yeah, I'd much rather have the Chiefs be the one than the two seed, because if they're the two, then they may end up having to play the Bengals again, which is not a good matchup for them. They've already lost to them three times in the last year. Then, of course, they'd have to go to Buffalo for the championship game, which would not be good. So, yeah, that's going to be huge for the Chiefs if the Bills can lose that game.
But if the somehow if the Chiefs end up with a two and it ends up like this, then it's Miami going to Kansas City. The 7 versus the 2. So,
you know. Is Tua going to be back at some point?
I have no idea. I've read everything. I mean, what's really amazing is you know, we were during the game, my son said, "Dad, he hit his head." And it was on a little dump down that I'm sure anybody that's listened to it seen it now. But it was funny that night, I was on Twitter and I follow a lot of Dolphin fans that are, you know, they're really good people, knowledgeable, gotten to be kind of friends with them. I've met some of them at games before. But one of them had actually shown the clip of him getting hit. And this guy happened to also be at the game. So he put the television clip on it and then put a picture that he had taken, or it was maybe a little video of Tua walking over and literally putting his head down and putting his hand over his head, almost like he had a headache. And he basically said right away, "I think he got hurt on this play." And he had 158 quarterback rating in the first half, and then throw those, you know, had a terrible second half with three unbelievable picks that were just so uncharacteristic. So you just wonder if, you know, once again, did the NFL miss it? You know, I mean, they've got these spotters out there. 2 weeks ago, I'm watching it, and Devontae Parker, the Patriots, just gets lit up. I mean, and I looked at Jackson, and I go, oh, my God, he has no idea where he's at. And no one stops it. No spotters stop it. But it was one of those, did he catch it or not? So it got reviewed. And then Aguilar, who's a receiver for the Vikings, noticed that he was not there and got him out. So the NFL's got to do a better job of you know, I don't know what it takes to be a spotter, but I take that job right now. I'm sure they get paid a lot. And I mean, I could tell you if somebody gets their head knocked in, you know, but, yeah, it's gonna be neat. I mean, we've got some great games coming up. And the last little thing was, we'll talk a little gambling here. I was talking with Dale, and he had heard it, and he said there's always something like this. But there was somebody that had put like $24 or $16. Did you read something like that, Dan? On they bet on every major sporting event. So probably the U.S. Open, the Masters, whatever, and they'd hit all of them. And then it came down to the World Cup. And they finally hedged their bet and they won $240,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the team they would have picked got beat. So, yeah, it was one of those, you know, start with, I don't know, it was either $16 or $24 and ended with $240,000. That wouldn't be a bad day, would it?
No, not at all. Yeah.
But that's all I was going to say. But everybody, I hope everybody listening has a, you know, had a great Christmas, has a happy new year, and hopefully the next time we have a broadcast, we'll be talking about spring training and Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some warmer weather after what we've been through. So, yeah. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up. So, yeah, come back here in 3 months, and we'll be back with another broadcast.
Hey, real quick, the password tonight is at the Clipper, buy Dan a beer, birthday beer. That's what you get. You get a listen free if you remember that and say it to Dan.
There you go. Maybe we'll see some of you up there tonight. Peace out.